I'd like to welcome everyone back to our Media Clip podcast. And today we'll be talking with Todd Siegler, who joined us a little bit over 6 months ago to Greenhouse & Jenks. He's both a lawyer and a CPA with over 15 years of experience in royalty auditing. And one particular area that he's focused on is gaming. And it's a fascinating area that I felt will be a great discussion around gaming and how royalty streams work within that industry and how Todd is involved within that industry. So welcome, Todd.
Thank you.
So our first question for you is if you can provide an overview for our audience of how the royalty streams work in the gaming industry.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I think first off, I'd want to clarify that I think depending upon the age of people listening to this, they may think that gaming is talking about video gaming. Alon was talking about gambling and the Las Vegas, Macau kind of complex that's slowly taking over the world. But to answer your question, you know, an overview of how this works, there are actually many, many similarities between kind of standard royalty auditing and licensing and in kind of out in the wild and how it works in the gaming environment. But there are also a few pretty significant differences that are becoming increasingly important as time goes by. So I think that, you know, just to kind of set the stage, in the kind of out in the wild, as I said, the natural way that licenses are monetized, you would have intellectual property that you go to a business partner, you set up an agreement. That agreement can be a varied complexity. It can have tiers. It can have waterfall effects. It can have thresholds or caps, all sorts of things to be able to kind of bracket and take into account all the different situations that each of the business partners envision happening in the, you know, X number of years that the contract will be in place. That's all true in the gaming environment as well. The gaming environment specifically related to slot machines is pretty well monetized, and the way that it's monetized is in two big areas. The first being the technology. So how that technology works is either gameplay or the structure of the machines, some of the technology and the components contained within the actual cabinets. So that's kind of one big area where there's a lot of licensing and royalty activity. The other big area is that there's also licensing into the game. So I don't know when the last time the person listening to this has been, you know, on a Las Vegas casino floor, but as you walk across the main part of the casino floor, you're going to see, you know, various different media properties, The Walking Dead or Game of Thrones or what have you, any of the hot properties. And I just recently attended a convention in Las Vegas a few weeks ago where we saw some of the newer properties that are coming out. And so all of that licensed material is kind of an outbound from the gaming casinos or from the gaming industry's perspective. And the other is the technology piece is both inbound and outbound, because a lot of these gaming players are very, very close competitors. And that kind of leads into the second point that I wanted to say about how the royalty streams work in this area, is that there's even more so than in, say, pharmaceutical royalties or something of that nature, where kind of the world is your oyster. There are many, many different players in those markets and different sources of funding for the generators of the license. In the gaming industry, developing relationships and respect are really important due to the relatively small circle of players that are really active in the licensing field. For instance, you'll have a smaller company that comes up with a great idea, and I'll talk about some of the evolving areas here in just a second, but comes up with a great idea, a novel approach to handling, let's say, social media gaming. And in order to get that market product to market, they're going to have to go to their business partner, to one of the larger gaming companies, and perhaps license some technology. So they're going to license out what they've developed. And so the bigger companies say, oh, we want to be a player in that too. We have an online platform, et cetera, et cetera. And so they'll develop a cross-licensing agreement. That is one of the unique aspects in the gaming area, is that it's not only the big players that have all the technology that they are licensing out, is that they are kind of sort of like a big farmer would be licensing kind of some of the smaller ideas or ideas from smaller companies and taking those and incorporating them, and they'll be in competing platforms. So that can lead to very convoluted and complex agreements with, again, thresholds and triggers and all those sorts of things for royalties. One of the other things that affects these royalty streams, which has been really interesting to navigate, is that unlike, again, to use pharma as that example again, unlike that where there are huge, huge companies and, you know, lots and lots of opportunities and money flowing, you know, from one side of the country or one side of the world to the other, the gaming industry is a very kind of insular world. And so you'll be talking with the CEO of a company that was a major player in Las Vegas in, say, the mid-90s, and they're still involved, but they had a very acrimonious dispute, let's say, with an executive from one of the larger gaming companies who they are now in a business relationship, you know, one of the ones that I just described. And that leads to a lot of tension and a certain lack of desire to want to interact with the license and track it. And again, we can talk about that more in a few minutes, but that's kind of the gaming environment in a nutshell.
Thank you, Todd. So moving into what we do for a living, which is auditing those royalty streams, what role do you play in this ecosystem you just described?
Well, my primary role is to perform royalty audits. So clients that own intellectual property that's been licensed will hire us to go out and basically have a conversation with their business partner to determine whether or not they've been paid the appropriate amount and been paid at the appropriate time. And there may be some qualitative factors as well that are important to them. It could be that they've used best efforts, could be that they have most favored nation clauses. There's a whole multitude of factors. But that's kind of the biggest piece of it. The other side that we work on regularly is licensing consulting. So the licensing consulting piece often takes the form of helping, from a couple different perspectives, helping a client figure out, one, how to structure their contract. If, again, the contracts are very convoluted, maybe we've gone through a couple audits and it's just been a mess because nobody really understands what was going on. And so they'll ask us to help streamline some of the language and some of the royalty trigger points such that it's easier for their licensee to comply, and also makes it more likely that the licensee will, one, not just spend less time complying, but also be more accurate in their compliance so that their audit costs can go down over time. So while that's against kind of our business plan, that that's what we're here trying to do, you know, we do try to help our clients kind of streamline the process, make it more efficient for them, less costly in the long run, and more amenable to the business relationship. Again, sometimes these can be quite contentious. There's been, you know, numerous litigations, much more so. I mean, you hear about the large litigations in high tech and whatnot, but these are more personal litigations where, you know, individual livelihoods have been damaged, et cetera, not just large corporations. So sometimes streamlining that process, making the audit easier, being sensitive to all the different dynamics at play, really is a different part of the licensing consulting that we try and help them with. In addition, one of the other types of consulting that we do is to try and help figure out what's the value of this contract. What exactly are you trying to do? And we're going to put a number on it. But what we do is work with our client in order to figure out, or help them figure out, exactly what's the best way to structure this, given the goals that are trying to be achieved in the negotiation. So we often will come in when the contract is being contemplated, maybe being renegotiated, and we'll try and figure out different ways to either define net sales, avoid net sales entirely, including different audit triggers, waterfalls, et cetera, or excluding them as is appropriate. And again, sometimes this has to do with the size of the companies, their relative sophistication. The smaller the company, the less bandwidth they will have to deal with a complicated license agreement and track it over time. Another consideration could be, again, the relationship between the parties. Some of the additional considerations that we do when conducting both the royalty audits and licensing consulting work is to improve communication. Quite often, and this goes true kind of, this is one of those areas that kind of goes across all royalty audit areas, is that people lose touch with each other. A contract is signed 3 years ago, the attorneys that crafted it no longer work with the parties. The people that were in charge of that particular project have left. The person that didn't realize that there was an escalation clause in year two came on in year three, and that wasn't ever transitioned to them properly. So there are all sorts of areas where things can go sideways. And when you lose track of your business partner and that relationship just gets stale just because of that turnover, we try and help instill that back into the relationship, clearly define who's in charge of this project from each side, reconnect the parties, and that's one of the things we try and work on going forward. And again, the other part, I guess I would say, would be qualitative considerations. So those can be things such as the type of documents that are supposed to be provided, the type of reporting documents that are supposed to be provided, the level of detail, the level of effort has to be expended by the licensee to exploit the technology that they are licensing. So things of that nature, we try and go in and help each of the parties kind of come to a meeting of the minds and to, again, to streamline and make more efficient the whole licensing process.
Great. And then final question. For someone who's earning royalties in the gaming industry or is involved in the process, what are the three key things they should consider doing now, in your judgment?
Well, I think it kind of depends on if they're just considering getting into a licensee-licensor relationship. I'd want to know who my business partner is. You want to have some due diligence. You want to make sure that if you're the licensor, that the licensee is going to be have the sufficient size, capital, experience, et cetera, knowledge to be able to exploit the license appropriately and fully. After all, you're licensing it in order to hopefully create an annuity revenue stream. So you want to make sure you know who you're dealing with. And again, sometimes this, these can be kind of forced marriages because the two parties have worked together in the past. They know each other's capabilities. Remember, they're the only parties that have particular capabilities in the gaming industry, so they know they have to work together, but maybe they don't want to work together. So again, knowing who your business partner is a critical piece. Figuring out how often you need to talk with them. I think that one of the mistakes that happens is that and this kind of goes into assessing their current portfolio for compliance and risk factors, but one of the things that licensors don't do, again, with turnover or a change in direction or strategic focus of a particular gaming company, is that they lose track of who exactly is on the other end of that phone or the other end of that email. They don't stay in touch closely enough to know that, oh, the controller or the chief legal officer or whoever's managing the response and the royalty compliance work has left the organization. And so, keeping that, kind of top of mind, even if that top of mind means you have a tickler reminder to reach out to them three times a year or something along those lines, is kind of would be one of my first recommendations. And I mentioned assessing the portfolio for compliance and risk. Taking a look at everything that you've received from all of your licensees. If you have a portfolio of these contracts, you'd be surprised at how often when we go out to take a look at a particular audit engagement, we have to figure out who the right person is at the licensee's place of business to talk to, and that changes all the time. People move on, they change careers, they change companies. Companies get purchased by other companies. That's happened a few times where it's a complete dead end going to old email addresses or phone numbers because they've been subsumed within another organization. So figuring that out, and some of those factors are, if you had 10 contracts, you know, assess how much money are you getting from them? You know, again, how often you were contacting them? When's the last time you kept in touch with them? Do you have a record of that? And how complete is the reporting that you've received to date? You know, one of the key indications for problems with an audit is, one, the change in turnover. Two, is a really big change in the dollar volume that's being reported. If you're getting $1 million 1 year and $3 million the next, or $200,000 the next, what happened? And if that person has changed that's in charge of that reporting, maybe that's what happened. So you want to kind of stay a little bit more closely connected than is kind of the normal in the industry. And then finally, I'd say, as part of this process, to kind of do a soft assessment of the compliance and risk factors, is I would, regardless of whether or not you have budget for it, I would say develop an audit program. Because what you're trying to do is, in some instances, completely unquantifiable. You want to send a message to the market, to all of your business partners and potential business partners, that you're going to be looking at what you're receiving, that you're going to tap on someone's shoulder someday and say, hey, did you pay me the appropriate amount? And did you pay it in a timely fashion in accordance with the terms of the contract? So what I would suggest is developing an audit program. Now, that doesn't mean you have to go out and hire somebody right away. But what it does mean is that you would go through that assessment, figure out what's going on, figure out which ones you think are at risk of an underpayment. You might want to have someone like me come out and take a look and help you do that assessment as part of our licensing consulting work. But then reaching out to your business partners and developing a closer relationship or maintaining a close relationship is definitely one of the things I would recommend right at the beginning if you were assessing what you should do in this environment.
Todd, thank you so much for walking us through the process, how you're involved in the process, and some of the key takeaways for people who are listening. I guess next time we are all headed out to the casinos and looking at those slot machines, we'll have a greater appreciation of the complexity of the process that's involved from a royalty stream perspective. Those of you who have additional questions and want to learn more about the gaming industry as well as how we're involved in the process, please reach out to Todd directly. Todd's contact information is available on our website at greenhafsandjenks.com. Thank you again, Todd.
Thank you, Lana. It was my pleasure.